When a priest is appointed bishop of a diocese, he gets a call from the nuncio, who is like the ambassador of the Pope to the United States. And he's free to accept or refuse the appointment. He doesn't even have to really give a reason. He can say, sorry, I don't accept because of an internal forum reason. Internal forum meaning confidential, personal. So it's clear that Father Michael Molloy did not do this. Either the accusation's all made up, or he thought that it would never come to light. We assume that the accusation is true, and therefore there is something good that we already are aware of, that this person, until now, didn't have enough courage to come forward. But at least with the appointment of Father Michael Molloy to be bishop, the person then had enough courage to say something. And please God, this will bring some healing for them and some justice as well. So we already see some good in this. But I want to begin my words today with a question. Is grace real? Grace is God's divine life, shared with us. It's a supernatural help and aid. It makes us possible to do good and to avoid evil. Does grace actually exist? Because we can't feel it. By definition, it's immaterial. You can't sense it with any of your senses. Is grace real? Because with so much sin and evil in the world, numerous examples of priests and bishops failing in their vocations, is grace real? Or is it just a Vatican hoax or ploy? What I mean by this, well, is grace made up? Is it just used to try to get people to behave? Is it the Vatican's ploy to keep them in business? We can sum up the church and say that the church is in the business of grace, you know, to be able to, that's the mission of the church, is to bring grace to people. Is there a file someplace deep down in the basement of the Vatican that actually says, you know, grace isn't real, it's just all made up? Is grace real? Is it possible to live a holy life? And we have to say yes. We have to say yes, grace is real. We have to say it is possible to live good and holy lives. And why can we say this? Well, first of all, the lives of the saints. Millions, countless of saints throughout the ages, transformed by grace, prove grace. All the canonized saints, but even the countless unknown unknown saints, their lives testify to the power of grace. Many people will use this latest humiliation of the church as just another reason to reject the Catholic Church or to condemn her. And I get that. All the warts, the blemishes, it makes it hard for people to believe that the Catholic Church is also the beautiful, spotless bride of Jesus Christ. But I will also say this, that God Himself didn't leave us when we were down and out. And therefore, we can't leave God and we can't leave His bride. Because of the sin of Adam and Eve, because of our own personal sin, we were destined to be eternally miserable and eternally separated from God. In fact, that's the main message of the Good Samaritan, that we are the man robbed, beaten, left dying on the side of the road. And the Good Samaritan is Jesus Christ, who comes to us, who pours water, oil, wine on our wounds, heals us, carries us on his back to the inn, to the church, to heal us and to save us. Or if we consider our gospel today, we are the servant with the huge debt that we cannot pay, and God is the master who forgives it. Jesus identified himself with us. God identified himself with us, broken humanity. He took on our shame, our guilt, our disgrace. He endured humiliation for us. Oftentimes we'll look at the crucifix and we'll say, yeah, Jesus was tortured and he was in pain the whole time, but it was also great humiliation on his part. All our crucifixes, they show, you know, a nice little piece of cloth around Jesus' midsection. That wasn't the reality. Jesus was up there, totally exposed to all the world. Jesus took on humiliation for us. This church, the Catholic Church, has taught me, has taught you about Jesus Christ. We have come to know Christ through his church. She has given each and every one of us new life through baptism, continues to sustain that divine life within us through the sacraments. She continues to carry me, carry you to heaven. So we cannot separate the head from the body, the bridegroom from his bride, just as you and your spouse are one flesh and cannot be separated. Jesus and the church are one flesh. Just as Eve came out of the side of Adam as he slept, the church came out of the side of Jesus when he was thrust with the spear, and out came blood and water, signifying baptism and the Eucharist, the church. So we can't leave, we cannot abandon the church while she is down and humiliated. There was a time when the church was majestic, loved by all, respected by all, truly believed to be divine by all. Consider the high Middle Ages, or even back 60 years or so. Some of you have lived during that time. She was very respected here, even in the United States. But we know that's not so much the case anymore. But does that mean we abandon her? Many people think that they can critique her, condemn her, as if they're external from her, almost like a consumer critiquing a product or some other business or corporation. Even many Catholics can get self-righteous in speaking about the scandals in the church and think they can judge her. But they are fake, fake Catholics. My friends, we here today, we don't have that luxury. We are not a separate entity. Don't get me wrong, we have to challenge, we have to hold our leaders accountable. But we can't point the finger as if we're not a part of the church. We don't have that luxury. Why? Because we are the church. You are the church. So we can't just stand on the outside and critique her any more than you can critique your own family, because you're part of the family. You are part of the church. And so when the church is down and out, humiliated as she is now, we have to come to the rescue. Just this past Friday, we remembered the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001. Think of all the firemen, all the police officers, all the paramedics, those heroic men and women who ran to the towers as they were falling. We must do the same. We cannot abandon the ship when the waters get rough. Me personally, if every other priest, every other bishop was found to be an abuser, I would still not abandon the church. I would continue to double down on my own pursuit of sanctity, because I want to be an example of what grace can do if we don't offer any resistance or obstacles to that grace. I want to be proof that grace is real, that it has the power to create us into saints. My friends, we don't have the luxury to sit outside the church and point fingers at her or to abandon her. I know many of you have heard jokes about the church. People have ridiculed you for being Catholic in one way or another. It isn't popular to be a faithful Catholic these days. But remember, Jesus did not leave us when we were down and out and humiliated. We can't leave him or the church. Rather, we must rush to the church, help her up, defend her, love her. And most of all, we must witness that grace can make us saints and produce holiness within us. by receiving the sacraments worthily and reverently. Last thing, in the chapter 6 of John's Gospel, Jesus lays out the bread of life discourse, that you must eat my flesh and drink my blood to be saved. And at the end, after many of the Jews left, many of the disciples left, Jesus turns to the 12 that are left with him, and he says, "Do you also want to leave?" And Peter, speaking up, says, quote, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. And we have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God." My friends, many others may ridicule, may leave the church, reject her, may not come back to Mass. Will you also leave? I don't think so. I think you will come to her rescue because you love her and you believe in her. My friends, we cannot leave her because we are the church.